Okay, we're starting. Today's our first time doing a share on this topic, in this group of topics, which I call Bitl and Blias. And I'm going to first explain what that is, just an overview to what we're going to plan on doing. Excuse me, before we get into the actual today's topic. Everybody knows that sort of the core of Hashkacha is Hilchos Basa B'Cholam and Teruvos. That's what people think of, at least, of the main things that people in Hashkacha are involved in, the Basa B'Cholam and Teruvos. And we're going to be doing things from Basa B'Cholam and Teruvos. We're not going to try at all to cover all of Basa B'Cholam and Teruvos. That's obviously beyond what we can do. But we're going to focus on two groups of things. Bittul, within the Halachas of Basa B'Cholam and Teruvos, and Blias. Okay, why do we care about Bittul and Blias? Like, what's the... What does that mean, or why is it relevant to us? Why is it relevant to us? Because, so for three reasons. You know, we never, when we give hashkacha, we don't allow anything to be bottle, so we wouldn't usually care, but what should bitl make a difference? So I have three applications that we'll be seeing again and again over time, and they are, one is for cases of bidyevet, when something goes wrong. Something was used the wrong way, or someone puts hashkacha on something that shouldn't be certified. So we want to care whether there was bittul. Maybe the trace ingredient was bottled into that food or it was not bottled. Okay, that's one thing. The second thing is for kashering, and that is to say is that we have a food being made on the same equipment as what we certify, and that food is not kosher. But if it turns out that food is not really trace in the first place, that food is really only it's really kosher, because the trace that's in there is batel, then we don't have to kasher afterwards. We don't care about that they ran that product beforehand, because mikra didn't, that thing was really kosher. And, you know, so the fact that we wouldn't give hashkacha to it, because it has something trace in it, but the trace that's in there is batel, so we don't have to worry about it. And the third example is when something does not have hashkacha. There are things that don't have hashkacha at all, because of some kind of trace ingredient, but consumers wonder if they can use it. So then again, they care about, is it bottled or is it not bottled? Yeah, we'll see plenty of examples of that, maybe not today, but we'll see plenty of examples that the thing is, it has a trace ingredient, and no one will give hashkacha to it, or the company chooses not to have hashkacha, but consumers wonder if they can use it, so then we care about whether it's bottled or if it's not bottled. That's why we care about it. Okay? And blea is similar. Whether there's a blea or there's not a blea also makes a difference for similar cases, because think about the simplest case. If you have something cold runs on a piece of machinery, and that cold thing was trace, we don't care that it was on there. It doesn't make a difference, so we could run our kosher product afterwards, because the fact that it was, whether there was or was not blia, plays a role into our kosher. Okay? What?
What
is it? It has to do with its blia. Is there a blia? So if it's kosher, then there was a blia, so that's what would be relevant. Okay? So that's why we're going to talk about things that have bitl and blias. We're not going to talk about other parts of Basa B'Cholam and Teruvos that have nothing to do with, that sort of nothing to do with us. Okay. Now, disclosure is that a fair amount of the things we're going to talk about come from topics we've talked about in previous years. And just L'Shleim the Davar, or as Chazara, we're going to repeat them. Today's going to be a good example of that. That today's topic is Davar Mayim, and it's going to have lots of things that we talked about. Particularly, there was one time when we learned in alcoholic beverages, in Halachavav, and Kufi Davar Chavav, that had to do with Davar Mayim. Okay, so...
We're just checking right now.
Excuse me?
We're just checking right now.
Yes, if I remember, I'll tell you which chapter you want to read, if you want to read the product. Because when I do these, I'm going to do just a shorter version of what I did then. So I'm going to get a shorter version. That's correct. So today was in chapter 14, in case you want to buy it. It's not on the screen, but you could... okay, so...
Shameless plug.
What do you think?
Shameless plug.
I'm probably, yeah, why shouldn't I plug myself? That's okay. Okay. Yeah, how first class coming soon. Okay, so well, you know what a maimed is? A davar maimed is something that makes this dramatic difference to a food. Maimed means to stand it up, so it makes it to gel, or like coagulates it, or makes it firm, or something like that. Like the two classic examples are we make cheese. So the granite that makes the cheese go from being a liquid milk to a solid cheese, that's a maimed. It solidifies it. Or another example a place can give is if you take... brewer's yeast, it's a chametz yeast, and you use it to turn honey into mead. So it didn't change the form of it, it's still liquid, but it goes from being a sweet beverage to being an alcoholic beverage. So that's another example of a maimed. It's also a maimed. Okay? So before I give you examples of what is a maimed, or as I give you examples of what is a maimed, I'm going to tell you four, sort of five, rule exceptions of things that don't qualify as a maimed, okay? That are not considered a maimed. Okay? That works. Let's see if this works. Okay, the first is Basa B'Cholam. Okay, the din is basar b'chalav is different than other isurim, that basar and chalav are both mutter, and they're always usher together if one is nice and tamen to the other. Only basar and chalav give tamen to each other, and therefore, if basar is maimed chalav, then that doesn't make a trait because it didn't taste like it. If it's just maimed, meaning it's bottled really, but it has a hamada, it doesn't make a trait. What is the example of that? Of course, is what I said to you, cheese. Okay. And when you make cheese, if you take rennet, it's part of the fourth stomach of the cow, either when you take the milk that's in the fourth stomach of the cow and you use it to coagulate milk into cheese, so it would be basar b'chalav, okay, because the from inside the cow together with the milk should be basar b'chalav, so if it's not nice and tam, then b'dieved it's mutter. Okay, as an aside, it's only mutter b'dieved. You can't put it in like a bitless l'chachil to put it in. That's one din. And there's another din. You can also make cheese out of the dried out cava itself. The cava is the fourth stomach. If you dry out the cava, the fourth stomach of the cow, if you actually dry it out, you can use that to make cheese also. It also has the same enzyme in it to help make the milk turn into cheese. So if you dry it out, and you use it to make cheese, then even if it's not both the b'shishim, it's also mutter, because the dried out thing doesn't have the same status. So if the dried out thing is put in, it's also b'dieved, the cheese is mutter. And the Yehuda says, and the Kregi says, if you have both of those together, if it's dried out keva, and it's both the b'shishim, then you'll have to do even l'chatchila. Okay, that's how you can make cheese l'chatchila using animal rennet. Okay, that's sort of an aside. Okay, so that was our first exception. Our first exception, an example of that is cheese. Okay, now when you make cheese, the basar b'chalav part of it, you don't have to worry about it being a hamada. You won't say it's that's my, but it can't be both because you made cheese. Okay, a second exception is the thing that's usher has to be inherently usher. If something is only usher because it has tam from something else, it became cheese from someplace else, that's not considered davar amayim. Okay. And the example of that, the example helps bring out the point, the example of that is yeast in an alcoholic beverage. Okay, yeast, when we make yeast commercially, it's invariably kosher. It could easily be chametz, but the ingredients themselves are invariably kosher. The ingredients themselves don't cause a problem, but there's a concern, maybe it's made on kalim with things that are treif. So if we use yeast to make an alcoholic beverage, we use yeast to turn something sugary into an alcoholic beverage, so the yeast, if it's balta b'shishim, doesn't make the thing treif as a maimed, because it's not inherently usher. The ingredients that made the yeast are actually kosher. It's only maimed, and it's maimed the other thing, that doesn't make a difference.
You can't use that yeast, and you can't use the product that was made with it.
Do you mean you can't do it l'chatchila?
Well, you
can't do it l'chatchila. No, you're not allowed to do it. I'm not thinking you can make b'cham. If you look at our liquor list and it says you could buy this beverage, you say, wait a second, but doesn't it have a maimed that made it had yeast in it? So, like I said, there's an example thing that's not certified, but it was done already. I couldn't do it l'chatchila. But if I buy it now, why isn't the yeast make it a maimed and make it treif? So, no, because the yeast inherently was kosher ingredients, just made on treif kalim potentially, and therefore that's like that. Okay, the third one is, the third exception is, zev zegar. Okay, and that is I think all three of these were in the halacha we were looking at. If you're looking back at the beginning, Pezayin halachi rav, which is what we're talking about today, and that is if there are two components that do the hamada together, then and each one of them couldn't do it by itself, then they're not considered a maimed, and then they're going to be bought. I'm going to give you some examples today in a few minutes, but we're going to really talk about Zev Zagarim the next time. Okay, the next time we do this topic, Bittul and Blias, we'll be talking about Zev Zagarim, lots of examples of many examples of where Zev Zagarim does or doesn't make a difference. Okay, that's the third time when we don't say something on Miami can't be about them. Okay, number four, this is a little more technical. Okay, this is not saying the Ramah. This is the only time we say that a Miami can't be about them is if the Miami stays in the food that's usher. If the maimed is not in the food, the maimed does its thing, but it's not part of the food, that's not usher. Okay? What in the world am I talking about? What is an example? An example will help you understand what I'm talking about. Is when you want to make, you've all heard of high fructose corn syrup. Okay, high fructose corn syrup. Okay, it's called high fructose corn syrup. It's because when you turn corn starch into corn syrup, it has a lot of glucose in it. And you want it, but glucose is not as sweet as fructose is, or in its concentrated form. So you want to turn the corn syrup, which is very full of glucose, to have a higher percentage of fructose. Okay? You may have seen like it's say HFCS 55-45, but it talks about the percentage, the ratio of glucose to fructose. So you want to make a higher level of fructose than would have naturally been in the glucose. That's why it's high fructose corn syrup. It's corn syrup that's been adjusted. You made the glucose to fructose ratio, you've adjusted that ratio to make it more fructosey than it would have been by itself. How do you do that? You use an enzyme. And the enzyme has a fancy name. It's called glucose esomerase. Okay, fancy name. And that's what this enzyme does. It switches over glucoses to fructose. So glucose and fructose are both sugars, and just rearranging the molecules to change it. Glucose esomerase it has another fancy name. It's called immobilized enzyme, which is to say is you don't put the enzyme in and then it does its trick. The enzyme just sits there, and the corn syrup pours over it, and that makes it make the change. The glucose esomerase doesn't get mixed into the food. It's not like yeast making whiskey, making liquor, making wine. The yeast, when you do that, you add the yeast into the thing. Here, the yeast the glucose esomerase just sits there, and it changes the glucose into fructose. So since it's not part of the corn syrup, therefore it's not considered amidment. Okay, it has the effect of amidment. Let's imagine that changing glucose into fructose has the effect of all the amidment.
That's for sure amidment.
No, I didn't say. We're talking about it. No, it's lobbed off that's considered amidment. But let's say, as an example, if it would have been considered amidment, that in this case it would be bottled anyhow because it's an immobilized enzyme. Okay, it doesn't get mixed in. It just sits there. Okay,
it's bottled. We would just say it's not there.
It's not bottled.
It's not there.
Right. No. Well, you, I think,
it's zero.
But you say since it's mimed, it therefore can't be bottled. Say no. You could say it that way. It's not in there, so it's
mimed. It's not bottled. So if we would say that it's there, then it's not bottled. You have to say it's not there.
Okay, that's another way of saying it. You could say it. Yes, you could say it. Okay, another.
I should say removed, correct?
Remains in. No, the exception is removed. Yeah, okay.
And number two is that
doesn't even not remain in.
You make alcoholic beverages, you filter out the yeast afterwards.
Right, but so we're going to get to in a way long time in Tim Kavav about. Is it possible to get every piece out of it?
What's the difference? The difference is that it went through the processing.
It went in and then pulled out. Mm-hmm. That assumed that it stays in, so to speak. Okay. And then that's assumed to stay in, as opposed to this thing, it never went. Okay, another example.
The possible call is a keva, would that be the same thing? Because you don't, if you use the keva.
No, it stays in. Oh, you mean if you repeat the whole keva itself? I don't know that juices don't leak out, but I'm not sure. Okay, but now another example of that is a catalyst. Okay, this is more Yechman's world. A catalyst, which is you want a reaction to happen. So you put some chemicals together, and you want a reaction to happen. And the reaction doesn't happen, or doesn't happen fast enough. So you put something else in there that's a catalyst. You put in beads of nickel into the thing, and that helps the reaction happen. But when you start the day, there's nickel in there. And when you finish the exact same thing is still there. When you walk out, the same thing is there that was there when you started the day. Okay, it didn't move. It didn't go anyplace. But it plays, if you understand the chemistry, it plays a role in helping the reaction happen faster. Okay, it's called a catalyst. So it doesn't get affected. It stays there. In your exhaust system of your car, you have a catalyst. Okay, you have a catalyst also there. So it helps the effect to turn the smoke coming out of your engine into something more pleasant for the atmosphere. So it just does its thing, but doesn't get moved in. So that again would not be
the challenge. How logically it's not in there, right?
You could say it that way. You can call that.
Why isn't
I'm used to looking at it from the start of mimet. Shouldn't it be a mimet and therefore not be bottled? And I say, and it's a dakichu.
You say, it's just not in there. Luckily speaking, it's not here. It's over there. Not here. If I have a trick over there, I'm eating this.
I'll accept that. You can take that if you want to. That's fine. So when you talk, you can take, not put into this year. Okay, now the last thing, which is not really an exception, okay, I'll call it an exception, it's not really an exception, and that is that it has to be considered a amendment, it has to have some kind of a meaningful effect on the food. Okay, it has to do something that's dramatic. Okay?
What? And also,
meaningless effect.
Because I'm saying this is exceptions. Yeah. Okay, fine. So it has to have this effect in order to be considered a mimet. It has to have something, do something significant enough that qualifies. I'll give you examples in a few minutes, but it has to be something that's enough to qualify as a mimet. Some things like as I was saying before, maybe turning glucose into fructose is not significant enough to be a mimet also, which is fair. Okay. So now I'm going to give you some examples. Fill in some more examples of things that are or are not a mimet. Okay. One is The way you make cottage cheese is you take milk and you put something into it that acidifies it. Okay, that sours it. You acidify it. Okay, so like for example, if you go home and you pour some vinegar into your milk, voila, it's going to start turning into what looks like essentially what's cottage cheese. Okay, you put lemon juice in and you'll have cottage cheese. Okay, and that's fine. It's perfectly healthy and edible. Okay, so commercially, when companies do that, they'll sometimes throw in rennet into it also. Okay, they'll throw in, not only will they put in the acidifier, something that makes it turn into do what it's supposed to do, they also throw in rennet also. That rennet that's being put in has a similar effect. It helps separate the part that's going to be the cheese from the part that's going to remain behind. But that the amount of rennet that's being put in is, if it was straight rennet, the amount of rennet that's being put in is not enough to really do a hamad on the milk. It wouldn't be enough to turn this into monster cheese. It wouldn't have enough, and therefore it's considered zebzagur. Okay, it does it plays a role in the making the cottage cheese. It doesn't play in it. It's not the only thing that's playing that role, and therefore it would be zebzagur. Okay. On the other hand, if you have wine and you want to turn it into vinegar, so there's you can put something in. You can put in, it's called mother of vinegar, okay, which is essentially the acetobacter, the enzyme that helps convert alcohol into vinegar. You can add it in to help the wine turn into vinegar. Now, if you leave the wine on your counter, it's going to turn into vinegar by itself, because the acetobacter from the atmosphere are going to get in there, and they're going to turn the wine to vinegar. If you leave it on your counter, it's going to happen by itself.
It's a bacteria or an enzyme?
It's a bacteria. Did I say enzyme? Okay, well, whatever it is, the enzyme, the thing that's out there is going to get into the acetobacter is going to get in there and turn the wine to vinegar. That will happen naturally. But if you put in the mother of vinegar, which is basically a lot of acetobacter from yesterday's batch, you put it in, it's going to happen a lot faster. Okay, that does not count as zebzagurim, because, as we're going to see when we talk about zebzagurim, one of the rules of zebzagurim is that it's something to do it by itself. If the thing you put in could do the hamada, make the change by itself, that doesn't qualify for zebzagur. So even though this process would have happened, let's say, in a week by itself, but you put in so much mother of vinegar that it happens by it, that does it by itself, that doesn't qualify for zebzagur. Okay, now we'll talk about the bottom list.
Well, so what about the other four examples?
That what?
If you put in something that makes it happen faster.
So if you put in enough that would do the hamada by itself, I mean, by itself, it would have taken 2 weeks to happen. You put it in that makes it happen. If what you did would by itself, without any other help, could do it, it doesn't qualify as zebzagur.
He means like yeast. All the examples in Aranissa.
Right.
You put in yeast, which had a mind.
So the yeast there, that's what I'm saying, the yeast there is the thing that makes the change happen by itself. Now, it would have happened by itself slowly, that's true. But you don't say it's zebzagur because the two parts are contributing, because the yeast could have done it, would do it by itself.
We're good? I think I misunderstood.
No. So tell me, what am I missing?
Maybe I misunderstood you. That's a maimed in general. A maimed that is something that just accelerates, and it would have happened anyway. But it happens to be the maimed that you're using is problematic. Does that constitute a maimed?
So the answer is, it depends. If the maimed could do something by itself, if you wouldn't have the natural process, would it happen? Could this? Did I put in enough maimed to make the process happen? Then the maimed is considered a maimed.
Well, if the maimed is inherently iser, mm-hmm. but all it's doing is accelerating, so is that considered?
Let's say, what do you mean? If not for the maimed, it would have happened slowly.
Right.
And now that I put the maimed, it would happen faster.
Right.
What happens if there would be no other factors here? There would just be maimed here. Would it happen? Could that do it?
Maybe I'm misunderstanding the host here. If I put in, let's say, the yeast, let's say, right, and let's say the yeast is, let's say, using the example of I put in the first example, what was it? The rennet. And then the rennet is inherently treif, mm-hmm. right? But I'm doing, if it leads to, let's just say, right, that the cheese would happen by itself anyway, but it would take a month to happen. And now because I put in the rennet, it's happening in 2 days. Is that considered a maimed?
Yes.
There's some exception. There's 5 different exceptions. That is a different exception. That's a whole exception.
No, but he's just giving an example. If there's enough rennet that could make this happen by itself, not forget about the natural process that would have happened. Right. This rennet could have made it happen, then right. That's considered a maimed.
Okay.
That's considered. Okay, so another case. Okay, now to the bottom one, the meaningful or meaningless effect, however you guys want to call it. Okay? Well, whatever you want to call it. Okay? Okay, whatever you want to call it. Okay, so Roshechta said an example. He said if you have a stabilizer, a stabilizer is something that a food would have, let's say, separated or done. It would have something would have happened to it if you didn't do anything. Okay, let's say for example, if you have peanut butter and you'd have the solids and the oil would separate from each other, and you put something in to keep them together. Okay, so it stabilizes, it keeps it in the state that it's in. So Shakta said that's not considered a maimed. It's not considered a maimed because when you put it in, nothing happens. It's just preventative that in 3 days from now, instead of it changing, it stays put. It doesn't get changed in the future. Okay, so that's not considered a maimed. It didn't have any effect on the food. Okay, it has a theoretical effect. It preventing something from going wrong. He said that's not considered a maimed. A different thing, which is called an emulsifier causes an effect to happen. In Ritz Hashem, when we talk about Zev Zagur, we're going to talk about that. Okay, where emulsifiers fit in. Have an unusual, interesting shadow. Okay, then, similar to that is, when you make sugar and oil, sugar, I get better glasses, though. Yeah, better glasses, if you said so.
No, this is
a chemical. Okay, sugar and oil, when you make sugar, so sugar is, so the certain amounts of the sugar clump up, and they use enzymes to break apart those clumps of sugar, so that overall it has a sweeter taste. In oil, you use certain enzymes to get a better yield out of it. As they press the fruit or the vegetables, or they try to extract it, these enzymes to help along with the process. So those are also, they're doing very little to the overall thing that you did. That's not considered meaningful enough to be a maimed.
Is that a maimed anyway?
Well, it's...
Again, getting more oil to come out of the thing is a maimed.
So it's turning a solid, a fruit or vegetable, and turning it into an oil. And it's having some kind of an effect. It's getting... Okay, you can argue about that. I'm good with that, okay. Okay, and another example, this is what I was talking about when you said it beforehand, is there's a group of enzymes called amylases, okay? So the amylases are used to turn... When you have starch... Starch is many sugar molecules attached together, many, like I think, could be hundreds of sugar molecules together. So there's two types of amylases that are used that we do consider amylase. They're called alpha amylase and beta amylase. Okay, really creative names. Okay, the alpha amylase and beta amylase. Beta amylase will strike you when I tell you that it's often the common way to make it is called barley beta amylase. Okay, it's the enzyme that comes out of barley when you steep it. That's in Keith's world. So those amylases take these long starches and break them down into smaller chunks that are more like sugars, okay? They're smaller chunks, so they go from being bland tasting, think corn, to shorter chains, think corn syrup, okay? To sugary, and those are considered amylase, okay? So, for example, there are people who make rice drinks for Pesach, and the way they break the rice, which is very bland, into rice milk, which tastes really sweet, the way they do that is using barley beta amylase, so that's chametz, you're not going to eat that on Pesach. Because if you use barley to do that transfer, to do that change, that's considered hamada. You change the bland starch, bland rice, into sweet rice drink, and that's considered that it did have a meaningful effect on the rice, and that is considered a maimed.
Even though it's liquid before and the liquid afterwards?
It's actually not liquid, but yeah, but it doesn't make a difference. It, just like
the, made it sweeter, that's a maimed.
Just like the Magen Avraham says, if you turn honey into mead, that's considered a maimed.
I wonder about that, but that's you're making an alcoholic beverage. That's like a significant. That's a very significant.
And you're making ground up rice. No, so if it's less sweet. So if the next case I'm going to give you is going to be okay. The next wait, 1 second. The next case is what happens if you have called invertase. Okay, invertase turns table sugar. Table sugar is two glucose molecules, two sugar molecules, two glucose. I think molecules together, and it breaks the invertase into individual molecules. Okay, so that change is so minimal that that's not considered hamad. Okay, or what you said before in turning glucose into fructose, maybe that's not considered hamad. It's a small change, but turning rice, bland rice, into rice milk, that is considered hamad. Okay,
the difference is
how dramatic the changes. How dramatic the change.
It sounds like, in some ways, it's like a scale away. It's hard sometimes hard to.
Work. Yes, so the good. You're right. So when we were dealing in this, this goes back many years. I went to a place to watch them make this and brought it back to Rebelski, and he said, yes, is that that's a dramatic enough change that we've considered that hamada. Okay? Now, you're right, it's a judgment. Well, an alpha amylase only breaks it down a certain amount, and a beta amylase a different amount. And
so we say it made it more sweet.
Right, so as we get more sweet. Oh. Right, but ground-up rice doesn't taste very sweet at all. It tastes bland. That's right. So, but you're in the invert taste, that it was that too little. Yes.
So back to the rice. Doesn't the enzyme exist naturally, to some extent?
I don't know if it does or doesn't. What's
the
difference?
No, so then it'd be zebzagram.
No, it's not zebzagram, because the amylase, the beta amylase you put into it could do the hamada by itself. If the isa could do the hamada by itself, that doesn't count for zebzagram.
No, they put in large quantities.
They put in enough to do the trick. I don't know if it would happen by itself. I don't know if it would or wouldn't. But maybe it would. But they're putting in the amount that's going to do the trick. They're not counting on anything happening naturally. Okay? Okay. So now I'm going to tell you... Okay, some other... So let's stop this now. Whoever, my fault to watch my face completely. I think. Okay. no more screen. You can watch that. But, okay. That's not changing. That's what I'm putting. Okay. Now I was switching to different kind of things about zebzagram. I'm sorry, but about davar hamayim. When we kasher, every time we do hagola because the way we paskin, because of tam kikar. We kasher things because there's tam of treif that's absorbed into the kli. We have to get it out. So we kasher it before we put our kosher food onto it, so we can get the tam out. It has to do with tam kikar. There's tam in there. But there are things that are not bottled but don't give tam. And our example is davar hamayim. The davar hamayim is not being nice and tam into the food because it's too little to be nice and tam. It's really bottled b'shishim. It's not able to be nice and tam. It's not bottled because for whatever reason davar hamayim can't be bottled. But it's not nice and tam. And therefore, if you cook something that's only treif because it had davar hamayim, you don't have to kasha the kelim. There is no tam of treif in this food, and therefore you don't have to kasher the kalim, even though the food itself was treif. You couldn't eat the food itself, but the that doesn't affect the kalim. So an example is from giving. Let's say you made rum. Rum is made from sugar, and you use a treif yeast to make it. Okay, you yeast from beer and use it to make your rum. So you can't eat the rum because the rum has a maimed that was chametz. You can't eat the rum itself. But the still that you made that rum on, you could use it for other rum without having to kasher it for Pesach. Okay? Because there's no tam of chametz in this kli, because the amount of chametz in it was bottled b'shishim. And therefore, even though the maimon makes the rum treif, it doesn't make the equipment treif, it doesn't make the kelim treif. Okay? And that rule applies not just to today, which is our first time we're talking about davar maimon, it's going to apply to other things. Example, like chazusa, and davar shesh matirin, or beria. It's like chazusa. If something has carmine in it, okay, so carmine is treif, and it makes the food treif, but it's always, invariably, it's bottled b'shishim. Okay, there's very little in there. So you can't eat the grapefruit juice that has carmine in it, because the carmine gives a color to it, and we hold like the rice is chazusa milsa, and you can't eat the grapefruit juice. Fine. But the pasteurized that the grape juice was made on does not become treif, because the amount of carmine that was in there was bottled b'shishim. There's no tam of carmine in the kelim, and therefore you don't have to kasher the kelim. Or let's say you made vegetables that no one checked them for bugs. Okay, so the bugs are not bottled because they're barriers, and therefore they're not bottled. They're not bottled because you have to find them by yourself. You have to get them out. So you can't eat the vegetables. Okay, you can't eat the vegetables. But the kale that it was made on, those are not affected because the amount of treif that's in there is bottled b'shishim. You don't have to worry about that. Okay, another thing. The rule is the davar hamayim is a din d'rabbanan. Davar hamayim midraisa, maimon is bottle, but midrabanan it's not bottle. So when we think about chametz arvah lav pesach, so the rule is that the only things that are chametz arvah lav pesach are things that midraisa you are not allowed to have in Pesach. If you're only not allowed to have midrabanan, then there's no chametz arvah lav pesach. So if you put those two things together, you would say, if the only chametz that's in something is a davar hamayim, then it wouldn't be subject to chametz arvah lav pesach. That's what you would think. But the Mishmur says not like that. Okay. Mishmur says it's not true. He says davar hamayim and milsa vidal taima. If they're in there, then you not have the food if the pesach either, even though they would be bottled b'shishim. Okay, but l'maisa in practice, it's not such a halach l'maisa for individuals. It is for companies. For individuals, not so negeh, because there's another rule that something is only chametz arvah pesach if there was a kazayis in one kli, Okay, so most people, if it's just a mime, it's hard to imagine as a kazai someone clearly. Think about if you have my example of your rum, and it has yeast in it that was made from chametz, I mean, how much yeast is in there? It's not kazai in your bottle of rum. You know, how much yeast could there be in there? So it wouldn't be chametz on the Pesach for that reason. Okay, commercially it would be, because in the whole
that.
Why does he say that? He said because it's as if it's there, and somehow that's worse, makes it worse. It's not clear. Somehow it's worse, even though it's in the Rabbanan, so it should not be chametz on Pesach. He said somehow it's worse because it's Dabraman. But so in a rum factory, there would potentially be a problem because the yeast that's in there, in their kli, they have a kazayin's worth of it. At home, it's not such a halacha maisa. Okay, now four other small things about davar maimed, all that we've done in the past, and that like this. Okay, bishlagim and kitnias are two isurim that we deal with that have are batel b'roiv. They don't need bittul b'shishim. Okay, they're different than most other isurim. They only need bittul b'roiv, not b'shishim. So, for example, if you have Pepsi, and it was made with corn syrup, and there's no chametz in it, so let's say the amount of corn syrup is kidneys. So let's say the corn syrup is 30%, 40% of the drink. So then the din is mi'ikra din, that's motor pesach. Okay, because kidneys is not b'roiv. So if there's no chametz in there, which is not necessarily true, but if there would be no chametz into there, you say, min, it's about the bride. Okay, I wouldn't recommend you eat it, but it's a fair question. Whether you should.
Nobody's
not to cause, because if you cause up, when the Kidneyless Liberation Army calls, if they want to know about that they're out there, when they call and they say, can I eat all these foods with Pesach? We tell them, hey, there's no chametz into it. I just told you that there's potential chametz in it and things like that. Okay, but if in the theory of it, I can tell you afterwards how it came up and not getting into it, but in theory, it would be mikra, then it would be bottle.
If something belongs in there, it's part of the thing, even though it's a meat, nobody's matter.
So we talked it. So
we.
I don't
know who's
matter. Nobody. No, it's farm also. I'll tell you the example of the instrument. I'll say it offline. Anyhow, so actually, do it this case.
Like it doesn't belong in there. It falls in there. Something is supposed to be in there. It's in there. It's part of the formula. 10% kidneys.
Okay, so we
it's not in the contemporary place we're talking about.
Okay, we talked about that thing with the rise that you're talking about. We talked about that also in alcohol beverages. I don't know which chapter it's in, but you could open it up. It's in the index. You'll find it. So
Why do you drink it?
I told you because there might be comments in it.
That's how you know there's not chametz.
And is that a
good... Come here, rabbi. Come here, rabbi. It'll be massive to you. Kidneys, that's 10% of the product, belongs in this part of the formula, and it's definitely not chametz.
Okay, so, now, but there's an interesting thing, and that is, there's reasons to think, okay, we're just a chazer, we're not going to tell you what the reason. There are reasons to think that even though kidneys and bishlak about the beroi, if they're put in as a maimed, somehow that's worse. Okay? Which sounds strange. Okay? If it's 40% of the food, it's bottle. If it's a half of a percent, but it's a maimed, then there's reasons to think that it should be also, that that's worse, and that you're not allowed to eat that on Pesach. Okay? So, Roshepta said, you don't have to worry about it. Okay? Don't be cautious for that cheetah. Okay? There's such a cheetah. We talked about this back in Simon Kufi days. Okay? For those of you who remember from way back when, in Simon Kufi, it's chapter 21, if you're looking at that book. So in Pastor, but one thing that has to do with Davar Maimed or has to do with Zev Zegurim is that even if there's more than one component, I'm going to get complicated here. If there's more than one component that makes up that flavor, and the flavor has one part of it that's chametz, even if it doesn't qualify with Zev Zegurim, it doesn't qualify. Okay, that was too complicated. Let's skip it again. Okay, now to Yossi's world. Okay, like this: when you add rennet into milk to make cheese. So I mentioned you before, you get the rennet into the milk, and what happens? Out comes the curd, which is the casein and the fat, and it separates, and it clumps together, and that's the cheese. And what's left behind is a bunch of liquid, which we call, collectively, we call that whey. Okay, it's a whole bunch of things, but we call it whey, what's left, the liquid that's left behind. So, obviously, the cheese, it's the rennet, or the whatever you put in to make it turn into cheese, was mimed the cheese. It turned the cheese, the curd part, turned it from a liquid into a solid. That's considered a maimed. That's pretty straightforward. That's the classic example of a maimed. It turned the liquid into a solid. What about the whey? Okay? What about the whey? So logically, if we were thinking about it, we would say it wasn't a maimed for the whey, because it just left the whey behind. it was a maimed for the curd. It turned the liquid into a solid, turning into a curd. That is a maimed. It made this liquid into a clumpy solid that we call cheese. What's left behind, you would think, is not considered a maimed. Some surfaces, that's not true. Some surfaces, no. Even on the whey is also considered a maimed. It turned the whey from, it turned it from sweet milk into this grayish liquid, watery liquid that we call whey. He says that's also a dramatic enough change. That's also considered a maimed. It's not, again, it's not, but on our own, I don't know if we would have thought to consider that a maimed. And most people follow that, that's considered to be a maimed. That even the whey had a hamada from the rennet and not just the cheese part. Okay? Another thing. I've mentioned to you about making liquor, whiskey, alcohol, that if you take yeast and you put yeast into something sugary and it turns it into alcohol and it makes liquor or whiskey or wine or something like that. So, as I keep mentioning in passing beforehand, if you scoop out that yeast later on, if the cultures are still alive, if you scoop them out at the end of the process, you could use them again. You could use them in the next batch. You could take from this batch and the yeast propagates, gets more and more of it, you scoop it out, put it into the next batch. Okay, you can move from here to there and you can make it again and again. So, and the Magen Avraham talks about that. He talks about this case of mead that I told you. He says you made your mead using brewer's yeast. I mean, you had made beer, and the yeast that came out of that beer is called brewer's yeast. That's what we call it. We take the yeast out of there, and then you put it into honey, and it turned the honey into mead. That's an alcoholic honey beverage. Okay, that's what you did. And then you kept doing it. The Magen Avraham says, it doesn't make a difference how many times you do it. If you keep taking the yeast from case to case, cases, even four or five times, it makes no difference. Each one is maimed the next. So all started from the original chametz, the beer that you started with. So you made into honey, into honey, into honey, into honey, honey. A bunch of times, it makes a difference. They're all asur on Pesach. That's what the Magen Avraham says. And there's a very much logic to what the Magen Avraham says. L'chaira, it seems to be not like a din at the end of Kos Tetzav, a din in, which we talked about when we did dairies. In Kos Tetzav, it says that if you make yogurt, in yogurt you can do the same thing. If you have live cultures in your yogurt, you could take a scoop of this yogurt, put it into milk, and it'll make that yogurt turn into, that milk turn into yogurt also. So there, the din is that if you do three hamadas, if you go through that process three times, and you started with chalvakam, and but after you do three hamadas, it's not considered a chol vakum anymore. Okay, and you're allowed to eat it. Okay, the chol vakum becomes chol v'shol, and you're allowed to eat it. Okay, after three hamadas, you turn the yogurt you take milk and turn it to yogurt, and you keep moving the pieces along. Then it's mutter. Okay, so there's a dogma problem over there. We spoke about them. We did about theories. The dogma problem. It tries to say a nafkamina between the cases. Why? That, and he says it's very limited. Basically, he goes like the Magen Avraham, that no matter how many times you do it, it's still considered to be a maimed. Those are exceptions for Chavakim and Kvinisakim and Safek Yisurim, special exceptions. Okay. One last thing, and that is, this has nothing to do with regular food, and that is, in when we talked about Hilchos Tefilas Kelim, we saw that sometimes when you have something made of two materials, two layers of materials, and one is maimed the other, being a maimed can play a role into whether it needs or doesn't need Tefilas Kelim. You can see chapter 7 if you can.